Okay, I'm recording. Okay.
Recording in progress.
Okay. can everyone hear me? Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so we the Daf Yomi started the Darim not too long ago, a few weeks ago. And there are a lot of interesting topics in the Darim. One thing I wanted to speak about was a topic that's not unique to the Darim, but there's a very interesting Ran in Meseches Nedarim that the Achronim speak about. So by way of background, when it comes to Nedarim, when it comes to Nezirus, when it comes to making a vow, when it comes to a Shvua, it comes to sacrificing, or sanctifying, I should say, a carbon. So the Gemara teaches us that there's a concept of a yad. So the Mishnah says, kinui nedarim kinedarim, a person makes a nether in a foreign language, a corrupt language, the nether is valid. And the topic of tonight's discussion, yadois nedarim kinedarim. If a person has a yad for nedarim, it's a nether. What's a yad for a nether? So the Mefarshim explain, just as a utensil, a person has a frying pan, for example. So you're not expected to pick up the frying pan when it's hot, you'll burn your hands. So the frying pan has a handle, it has a yad. So when you pick up the handle, the entire kli comes up with the handle. That's the analogy to a yad. So the same thing applies to nedarim, to naziris, to karbanis. You can express the entire utterance. You can say the entire nether. A person could say, for example, kikar ze olai karbon. I would like this kikar, I would like this loaf of bread to be considered to me as a karbon, as something that's hektish. That would be the full utterance of a nether. Or a person can simply say kikar ze olai, where the person never actually expressed iser. He never said he wants the kikar, the loaf of bread, to be aser, but it's a yad. It's a half statement. It's a yad. It's a handle. That through the handle of the statement, a small fragment of the statement, you can hop on. You can hold on to the entire statement. It'll be considered as if you uttered the entire statement. That's the concept of a yad. And the Gemara brings us various makoris, what the source of such a thing is. It's a very strange halacha. The nether has to be uttered, it has to be articulated. You can't simply think in your mind that you want to affect the nether. You have to utter the nether, you have to say it. However, the Torah is sort of very loose, it's very lowers the bar how much you have to utter, how much do I have to say. I only have to say a partial statement, and it'll be as if you said the entire statement. It's a yad, it's a handle for the entire statement. Just as when you pick up a pot by the handle, the entire pot follows the handle. So too, when you chop on, when you have a miksas dibor, a partial dibor, it's as if you said the entire dibor. What's the makar for this? What are the sources for this? So the Gemara actually brings three different psukim, three different possible sources. One pasuk is in Parshas Nasai. The pasuk says nazir lahazir, a double lashon. A person was becoming a nazir. It says nazir lahazir. So we learn lasois yadois naziris kinaziris, that a person could affect naziris. A person can accept upon himself a naziris obligation through a yad, nazir lahazir. Through the extra word, we learn that even a partial dibur will be taken as an acceptance of the naziris. Ainli ela binaziris binadarim inayin. That teaches me naziris. What about ordinary nadarim? Talmud loymar, the pasuk says ish ki yafli. Lindor neder, nazir lahazir, lashem. The pasuk says in the parsha of Naziris, in Parshas Nasai, that if a man makes a neder, nazir lahazir. So we make a hekesh, because Naziris is a form of nedarim. You're using the mechanism of a neder to accept upon yourself the Naziris vow. So we make a hekesh, we compare ordinary nedarim to a nazir vow. Makish Naziris le nedarim. Or nedarim la naziris. We compare nedarim to naziris and vice versa. Ma naziris asa by yadais naziris ki naziris. Just as by naziris a handle for Nazirus. A partial statement is taken as the entire statement. We learn that from the words Nazir Lahazir. Af Nadarim, Asa Behem Yadis Nadarim Kinadarim. So by way of a hekish, by way of comparison, we say that a yad for a neder is also taken to be an expression of the Nadarim. So that's one way we know it. We learn it from a Nazir, just like a Nazir, Nazir Lahazir, that a yad would be considered a statement. He doesn't have to fully articulate Hareini Nazir, I want to be a Nazir. He can simply say Hareini, or he can say Aha, and that partial statement will be taken as a complete statement that he wants to be a Nazir. The Gemara tells us, so the Gemara is focusing because in the very same pasuk of Nazir, it says, Ish ki yafli lindur neder. So it says a double expression of neder also, Nazir lahazir. So why do we have to look at the Nazir as the source? We can look at lindur neder itself as a source because there's a redundancy there as well. There's an extra word is there, lindur neder as well. So the Gemara tells us, if you hold Dibra Torah Kalashim B'nei Yondam, if you hold that the Torah sometimes speaks the way a person would speak, Lindor Neder, they loosely translate, he will surely make a Neder. So fine, that wouldn't be considered extra. But if you hold that Loi Dibra Torah Kalashim B'nei Yondam, that the Torah does not just speak the way people speak, every single word has to be expounded. So Hai Lindor Neder my Ovid, like, what do we do with the double expression Lindor Neder? So the Gemara says, Darish Lailasis Yadis Nadarim Kinadar, that instead of learning it from Nazir, we can use the drasha of Nazir Lahazir for something else. Instead, we can use Lindor Neder to be the drasha, to be the source for Yadis. So far we have two possible sources for Yadis. Yadis can either be derived from Nazir Lahazir, the extra word by Nazir, or it can be derived from Neder itself, Lindor Neder. There's a double expression of Neder as well. That could teach us Yad Linadarim, that a handle to the statement is considered like the entire statement. Finally, the Gemara in the Dharma of Gimel Amud Beis brings another drasha, B'marava Amri, in the west, in Eretz Yisrael, maybe it's the Talmud Yerushalmi, so the Gemara has another source. Is Tana the Mapik Leil Yadis Min Lindor Neder? There is a Tana who derives it from the same source that we just derived it from, Lindor Neder. Is Tana the Mapik Leil Min Kolay Yotze Mipiv Yase? There's another pasuk, Kol Hayotzei Mipiv Yaseh, you must fulfill whatever you said. So we learn from the extra word kol, whatever you say, whatever you express, that even if you merely expressed half an expression, a yad, the halacha is that the neder is chal, the neder is effective. So we have three possible mekoiris, three possible sources for this interesting halacha of yadois. A partial expression is taken as a full expression. The Gemara in Nedarim and Avav Mabez and Zayin Amad Aleph goes through item after item. How many areas of halacha do we apply this concept of yad? So we know so far that it applies to Nedarim. Naziris is a form of a neder. It applies to Nedarim. But the Gemara asks, what if a person uses a partial expression of a yad for Kiddushin? Instead of saying the entire expression, Harei At Mikudeshes Liba Tabazu, he only has a partial expression, Harei At. So the Gemara goes on case after case. So the Gemara has two cases that we would like to focus on. Boy Rav Papa, Rav Papa asks, Yesh Yad LePeya, Oy Ein Yad LePeya. So we all know what Peya is. Peya is that in Eretz Yisrael, they used to leave a corner of the field for the Aniyim. So you would harvest your field and leave over a corner of your field for Aniyim. Nowadays, it's not normally done because the Chazon Ish explains, because Aniyim aren't going to collect it anyway. Who's going to go to somebody else's field and harvest? So the halacha is you don't have to leave it for the Aniyim if the Aniyim aren't going to take it anyway. So nowadays, it's not as practiced. But there is a halacha in the day of Peya. You declare the corner of your field Peya. You say, Hareza Peya. Hareza Peya is a halais. You're affecting that it's hefker la'aniyim, you're designating it, that it's designated for the aniyim, and it'll be considered peya, and it will be pater from meiser. You're not simply leaving it for the aniyim, but you're declaring it peya, and it gives us the status of peya. So our papa says, yesh yad la'peya, or ein yad la'peya. What if the declaration to declare the corner of your field peya, if you did it with half a statement, you used the yad, would that designate it as peya, or not. So, of course, if you want to leave it for the poor people, you can do what you want. But will it have the status? Will it assume the status of payah? Which means, would it be pater from meiser? Would you fulfill your payah obligation? Because you didn't use a full statement. You didn't fully declare it as payah. So the Gemara says, hey, chidami, what would the case be? Give us an example of a partial statement for payah. So, ilayma de omar hadein ugya lahavye payah. So, for example, the person designated clearly one row is for payah. That he said clearly. Hadin ugya lahavi payah. I want this row of vegetable. I want this row of produce to be payah. But hadin nami. And then he looks at the next row and he says, but hadin nami. And this row as well. So he just finished saying, I want this row to be payah. And then toich kedei dibur, he says, I want the second row as well. So the Gemara says, that's obvious. Hahi peya ma'al yasehi. That's already considered a full statement of peya because the pronoun, I want this peya to, I want this row as well, coming off of the existing statement that you want the first row to be peya, clearly you mean to say that you want the second row to be peya. That wouldn't even be a yad. That would be considered already a full statement. So what is the case? So ki kami boile, the case is, the question would be, ki going to Omar, v'hadein, b'li Omar nami. So he said regarding the first row, this row should be payah, and then you look at the second row and you say, and this. You didn't say this as well. You simply looked at the second row and said, and this. So what do you mean? It's not so clear. Now it's a half statement. Do you mean this should also be payah? Or do you mean this row should be for me? It's not clear. You didn't say, and this as well. You said, and what about this row? So, mi amrinan, do we say, kibin de iskish le karbanis, that there's actually a pasuk that peyah is compared to karbanis. So, ma karbanis yesh lehem yad. So, on the one hand, we should compare it to karbanis and say that it has a yad, that a partial statement will be taken as a designation of peyah, and then the produce will have the status of peyah and all the consequences that follow that status. Or perhaps it's only compared to karbanis regarding bal ta'acher, that you're not allowed to delay the mitzvah. But perhaps it's not compared to karbanis regarding a yad. And if the person would say, I want this row to be peya, and then the person says, and this row, since it's not clear enough what he means, so even if he intends for it to be peya, it would not be effective for peya, it would not be enough of a declaration for peya, because maybe a yad does not apply to peya. Maybe we only compare peya to karbanis regarding other halachas, not to delay your vow and your mitzvah, but maybe the parsha of yadis, half statements are not enough when it comes to peya. The Gemara goes on to ask a similar question regarding tzedaka. Yesh yad litzedaka, or ein yad litzedaka. What about a yad for tzedaka? So again, the Gemara goes through the same back and forth. Hey, chidami, what would the case be? So, ilayim and the Omar hadein zuz litzdaka v'hadein nami. The person has two coins in front of him. One coin, he clearly articulates that he wants it to be for tzedaka. I want this coin, this zuz, this dinar, to be for tzedaka. And then on the second coin, he says, and this as well. So again, hahu tzedaka atzmihi, that's actual, that would be a full-fledged declaration of tzedaka. You said you want this coin also, so clearly you're including it in the tzedaka. So rather the case is, the way we said regarding the pay, if you're going to Omar hadein v'li Omar nami, he said this coin should be for tzedaka, and then on the second coin he says, and this one. You didn't say what you want. My, what does he mean? Hadein nami tzedaka ka Omar? Does he mean to say that he wants the second coin to be tzedaka as well? Idilma, or perhaps my v'hadein, what does he mean when he says, and this, l'nafkusa ba'alma kamer, that one, he means he wants to be able to spend it on himself. He wants to buy himself a drink. He wants to use the money on himself. He wants to splurge on himself. So again, here's an example of a yad for tzedakah. If he intends to declare it as tzedakah, he can't take it back. He already made a neder to tzedakah. But if his statement is not sufficient, then he'd be allowed to take it back because he didn't say enough to declare it as tzedaka. So again, even if his intent was to give the second coin for tzedaka, but if it's not enough of a dibor, if it's not inherent in the dibor, then he would not be obligated in the tzedaka. So do we say he means to designate it as tzedakah, in which case you would have to give it to tzedakah, or do we say he just means he wants to spend it on himself, and even if his true intent was to use it for tzedakah, it wouldn't work. Dibur hu do aske, he didn't complete the dibur. So the Gemara explains the question, mi amrinan, do we say, kivin de iskish le karbonis? Again, the same as peyah. On the one hand, tzedakah is compared to karbonis because the pasuk says, beficha, and we darshin meseches Rosh Hashanah zut tzedakah, that a person could take upon himself a tzedakah vow with his dibur, beficha, ma karbonis yesh lehem yad, af tzedakah yesh le yad. Like just like a carbon, you can declare something as a carbon with a yad, with a half statement. So too, you can declare tzedakah with a half statement. Oidilma, or do we say lebal ta'achar hu de'iskish? The same thing we said before. It's only compared to karbanis regarding the mitzvah to not delay the giving, but the declaration of tzedakah would have to be a complete dibur, and therefore you would not be obligated in tzedakah. Again, just to reiterate, we're not questioning, we're not judging. What the person's intent was. Even if the person tells us afterwards that his intent was 100% to give it to tzedakah, or his intent was 100% to give it towards peyah, but if his dibur was not sufficient, it would not have been effective. We're questioning halachically if he uttered an effective dibur or not. Is there a yad for peyah? Is there a yad for tzedakah? The Ran explains that the shaila regarding peyah and the shaila regarding tzedakah are one and the same. Is there a hekesh to karbanis or not? So what's the answer? Is there a yad for peyah? Is there a yad for tzedakah or not? What if I use a partial statement? Does that obligate me or not? Is it a declaration of peyah or not? The Gemara's conclusion is tiboy. Tiboy is the Gemara Nedarim's way of saying teku. The expressions in Nedarim are very similar to like the Yerushalmi. It's a different feel. Meseches Nedarim is a totally different feel than the other mesechtas. So tiboy is the same as teku. Nisher iboy deli ifshita, it remains an unanswered question. So halacha lamaisa, if a person would designate, would attempt to obligate himself to tzedakah with a yad, the halacha is it's a suffix. It's iboy deli ifshita. There's no resolution. We don't know the answer whether or not the yad with tzedakah obligates him or not, or whether or not the yad lepeya would obligate him or not. So the question always comes up that whenever there's a teku in the shas, so what do we do lemaisa, right? Is there a yad for tzedakah or not? The Gemara doesn't know the answer. How are we supposed to know the answer? How should we conduct ourselves in practice? Is there a yad for tzedakah or not? So the Ran brings a machlekes rishonim, how we should conduct ourselves in practice. So let's learn this Ran together. It's a moira dika Ran. It's such a fascinating Ran. The Ran says like this, le'inyan halacha. So what's the halacha? Because the Gemara never comes out definitively if there's a yad or not. So when it comes to kedushin, so we mentioned the Gemara has the question if a half statement for kedushin would be enough to affect the kedushin. We have to be strict. We have to consider the woman married, and if the woman wants to marry someone else, we're going to have to require a get me suffix. Why? Because since the question was unanswered, it's a suffix deraisa l'chumra. We don't know is the woman married or not. If the yad is effective, she's married. If the yad is not a sufficient dibur, then she's not married. We can't just let her walk off because maybe she's married. So he's going to have to give her a get. He's going to have to formally divorce her misafik because it's a doubt. When it comes to peyah and tzedakah, it's not so clear. So the Ran brings a machlokes rishonim, the Rashba and the Ramban. The Rashba says that when it comes to peyah and tzedakah, since the question was unresolved, we have to be strict. The person said, Hadain, that he wants this row. He says, and this one. He didn't sufficiently say, what about that one? Do you want it to be payah or do you want to keep it for yourself? So his intent was to make it payah, but he uttered a fragmented statement. So the halacha is, says the Rashba, you have to leave it for the Aniyim. You can't take it back because we have to be strict. The Ramban says the same thing. The Ramban says in his halachas, the boyin de tztaka le'itshita, that the question regarding tztaka was not resolved. The Hedya in the Gemara explicitly, and sugyin de yesh yad le'tztaka, the Ramban says that the mashmoyas, the Gemara seems to be inclined that you are obligated in the tzedakah. The Ramban will explain what that means in a moment. And second of all, says the Ramban, kaimalon de kol teku de iser l'chumra. Whenever there's a suffik iser, we know the rule, suffik do'i raisa l'chumra. So you're going to have to keep your promise to give the tzedakah because suffik do'i raisa l'chumra. So if you notice, there's a subtle difference between the Ramban and the Rashba. The Rashba said his ruling regarding peya and tzedakah. So the Gemara left it unresolved. Do I have to designate, do I have to leave it for the poor people, the peya, or do I have to leave the tzedakah to the aniyim? So the Rashba paskins that the peya and the tzedakah both have to be given or left to the aniyim misafik, because we have to go l'chumra. The Ramban only talks about tzedakah. He doesn't discuss the peya example. He only discusses the tzedakah example. The Ramban says, number one, the Gemara is mashma, that it's leaning towards yesh yad l'tzedakah. And number two, says the Ramban, anyway, it's a suffik iser. And anytime there's a suffik iser, we know the rule, suffik deraisa l'chum. Now, the Ran explains what the Ramban said here. Ma'i deko'am razal, the sugin yesh yad l'tzedakah. The reason why the Ramban says that the sugya is mashma, that the sugya, the Gemara, is leaning towards yesh yad l'tzedakah, what gives the Ramban that impression? Because the Gemara says, im timsa loimra yesh yad l'tzedakah, if you answer that there's yad l'tzedakah, the Gemara says, im timsa loimra, if you'll say, like if we would theoretically decide that there's yesh yad l'tzedakah, so the Gemara there goes on to another question, what about yad for hefker? But the Gemara builds a second question upon the first question. If you answer me that there is yad for tzedakah, that a fragmented statement obligates you in tzedakah, then the Gemara goes on, so then what about hefker? What about this case? So the Ramban, the Ran explains that the Rambam Shita is, it's a style of psak, that whenever the Gemara says, im timtza loimar, whenever the Gemara says that if you answer me this way, then what about this? It's as if we're leveraging a second question on top of a first question. The second question's only relevant if you answer the first question a certain way. The Rambam takes from that that the Gemara really feels that that is the answer to the question. So even though officially the Gemara concluded teku or tiboy, that we don't know the answer, but the Rambam says that whenever the Gemara's style is to ask a second question, geboit on a first question, built on the resolution of a first question, even though the Gemara never formally resolved the first question, that itself is considered a resolution, because you can only get to the second question if you assume this answer to the first question. So since the Gemara says regarding the question of yad l'tzedakah, that if you answer me that there is a yad, that a fragmented statement counts, what about hefker? That itself is taken as a psak. So says the Ran, the reason why the Ramban says that the sugya is leaning towards yesh yad l'tzedakah is because the Gemara deals with that question biderech im timsa loimar, which means that it's really sort of resolving the question. However, says the Ran takes issue with the second statement of the Ramban. Why are you saying that we would have to be strict because kol teku de iser l'chumra? Why are you telling us that because it's a suffik iser, we would apply the rule of suffik do'i raisa l'chumra on the question of tzedakah? V'nira dehiskim gam kein l'zeha rashba. And the Ran says that the Rashba said the same thing. The Rashba actually said more than the Ramban. The Rashba said that we have to be strict at the end regarding tzedakah and even regarding peya. The Ramban only talked about tzedakah. One of the reasons that the Ramban gave, besides the im timsa loimar reason, the other reason the Ramban gave is because it's a suffik iser, suffik deraisa l'chumra. And the Rashba said the same thing. Says the Ran, timhani alayhem. The Ramban says, I'm baffled by what the Ramban and the Rashba say. Why? Because the sugya is mefurish at the end of Zroya Olachayayim. In a perek in Chulin, the Gemara tells us that Safik Mamin Aniyim, whenever you have a doubt, if you have to give money to the Aniyim, the gifts to the poor, and the Ran says that includes Peya, that includes Leket, the shearings that you drop, the Torah tells us you have to leave it for the poor people. If there's ever a doubt whether that dropping is included in the leket, you can keep it for yourself. If there's ever a doubt whether or not this gift to the poor is indeed a gift to the poor, whenever it's in doubt, it's treated as a suffik mamin. Harehu kesafik mamin, and we're lenient to the nitba. We apply the rule hamotzi mechaveroi olav hara. Right. So the Ran fundamentally argues with the Rashba and the Ramban. The Rashba and the Ramban say, they seem to say, that whenever there's a suffix mamin in the end, they're discussing peya. The Rashba is discussing peya. The Ramban is discussing the tzedakah case. Whenever there's a suffix, if I have to give something to the poor person, that's considered an issue of iser, and we apply the rule suffix the raisa l'chumra. You have to give it. When in doubt, you have to give it. But the Ran argues and says that suffix aniyim, even though it's a mitzvah to give tzedakah to the aniyim, if there's ever a doubt whether this coin was intended to tzedakah or not, the halacha is you can keep the money for yourself because it's not a suffik iser deraisa l'chumra. It's considered a suffik mamin. It's considered just ben adam l'chaveroi. It's not considered ben adam l'makum. It's considered ben adam l'chaveroi, and the halacha is hamoitzi mechaveroi olav haraya, that the burden of proof would have to be on the poor person to extract the money from me. And we follow the muchzik, we follow the possession of the money. Possession is 9/10 of the law. So now, what's the Ran's raya? The Ran brings some tremendous proofs that matnas aniyim is categorized as regular money. It's not categorized as iser veheter, yoredeya, suffik deraisa l'chumra. It's categorized as regular money, hamotzi mechaveiro olav haraya. Because the Gemara in Chulin says like this. The Mishnah says, ger shenis gayer. If you have a convert, a non-Jewish person who is in the middle of converting, he was in transition, he was in the middle of converting, and he converted. Now, the halacha is that when you shecht a behema, a cow or a goat or a sheep, the halacha is you have to give certain matanois to a kohen. You have to give the zroya, the forearm, the lechayayim, the tongue, and the cheekbone, the meat around the tongue, and you have to give the keba, you have to give one of the four stomachs that a behemah has, you have to give a keba to the kohen. Three gifts that you give the kohen. Now, if you have someone who was in the process of converting, and he contracted a shoychet to shecht his behemah while he was becoming a ger, and we don't know if the animal was actually shechted while the owner was not Jewish, or if the shechita occurred after the conversion, after the person was already Jewish. What's the difference? The animal is kosher regardless, because a kosher shechit shechted the animal. The animal is kosher regardless. The question is, if the ger is obligated in the matanis, in the priestly gifts, if the behemah was shechted while he wasn't Jewish before the geiris, he's not obligated in the matanis. But if the behemah was shechted after the geiris, then he's obligated in the matanis, the matnas kuna, just like anybody else is when their behemah is shechted. So it's a suffik. So the Mishnah says, suffik mamin pater. We categorize this as a regular suffik mamin, and the halacha is that the ger is exempt. The burden of proof is on the kohen. Prove to me that the animal was shechted after my conversion, and then I'll gladly give you the matanis. But until you prove to me that the shechita was after the geiris, so perhaps the shechita was before the geiris, perhaps I don't owe you the money, I don't owe you the gifts, the tongue and the forearm and the stomach, and I can keep it for myself. So the Gemara says, you see from here, that we treat the priestly gifts as regular mamin, sveika lakula. So far, not a problem, because we're not discussing matnas kahuna, we're discussing matnas aniyim. So far, so good. But the Gemara compares it to suffik aniyim. The Gemara says, wait a minute, what happens if a farmer is harvesting his field, and he finds, after he finishes harvesting the field, he finds stalks of wheat in the ant holes? In other words, maybe his field was infested, but the insects already they already ate their way through, and they actually harvested some of the stalks of the grain. So that belongs obviously to the owner. If he finds these stalks that the termites cut the stalks, he would be allowed to keep those stalks because those stalks weren't leket. That's his property. But he also confused with the droppings. So the leket belongs to the aniyim, but there's a lot of stalks anyway that are lying around due to natural causes. The insects, they also cut down some of the stalks. So the halacha is like this. It says there that you have to give the whole thing to the poor people. Even though we can't determine exactly what's leket, what belongs to them and what belongs to me, but I have to give everything to the aniyim. When in doubt, you have to give everything to the aniyim. And the Gemara asks a contradiction. Why is it that when it comes to the suffix, if you have to give the matnis kahuna, was it shechted after the geiris or before the geiris? The halacha is that the owner can hold on to the pieces of meat. He doesn't have to give the pieces of meat to the kohen. And why is it that in a similar case, when you're not sure, we lost track of what were the droppings during the harvest and what was there from before? The halacha is you have to give the whole thing to the ani. So the Gemara answers that the field has a chazaka. Because the halacha is that you were Jewish the whole time, you're a farmer harvesting your field. So the field has a status that it's obligated in leket. So that's why any droppings that are there all goes to the aniyim, even though technically it's a doubt, because there's a cheskas chiyuv. The Torah tells us that when it comes to matnas aniyim, ani v'rosh hatzdiku, there's a special pasuk that you have to give it to the poor people, and that's because there's a cheskas chiyuv. That's because the status, the field is subject to the halacha of leket. But when it comes to the matnas kahuna, says the Gemara, he started off not being Jewish. So his behema, his animal, was never subject to the mitzvah of matanis. So that's why the burden of proof lies with the Kohen to prove to me that my behema was ever obligated to give you the priestly gifts in the first place. But when you have a Jew who's harvesting the field, where his field is certainly subject to the mitzvah of leket, so the halacha is that whenever there's a doubt on the droppings in the field, you're going to have to give all of those stalks to the poor people because of a chazaka. So here's the Ran's question. The Ran's question is that you see clearly from the Gemara in Cholin that we're comparing matnas aniyim to matnas kahuna. Why couldn't the Gemara simply answer that matnas aniyim is treated as a suffik iser deraisa lechomra? Suffik matanais kahuna is a mammon, so I can hold on to the money. The burden of proof is on you. But when it comes to suffik matnas aniyim, so it, the Ramban and the Rashba consider it a suffik iser, so the halacha should be that I have to give it because it's a suffik iser deraisa lechomra. The Gemara does not say that. The Gemara entertains the question, and the Gemara gives a different distinction between the cheskas chiyav of the sadeh versus the cheskas ptur of the ger of his behema of the matnas kahuna. So that's a big question. If suffik tzedaka is considered a suffik iser deraisa, so why didn't the Gemara say that when we were discussing other examples of suffik matnas aniyim? That's the Ran's question. Further, the Ran reinforces the question that the Gemara there has a similar example with the ger. The Gemara says, what about a non-Jew who's making a dough? He's making a bread dough. The person's learning about Yiddishkeit. He's excited about becoming a ger. He's making challah. So he's making dough. Again, the same thing happened, that we lost track if the geiris occurred before he finished the dough or whether the geiris occurred after he finished the dough. What's the difference? Whether the dough, the isa, was nischayev in challah. If the dough was completed as a Jew, he has to give a portion to the kohen. It's challah. It's chayev in challah. It's tevel. If the dough was completed before he became Jewish, it never triggered the obligation for challah, and he'd be able to eat that bread one last time without taking off challah, because next time he makes dough, he'll have to take the challah. So the Gemara tells us, what's the difference over there? Why does he have to separate the challah? So answers the Gemara. The Gemara actually says, because the dough is a suffik tevel. You're not allowed to eat dough if you're obligated in challah, in truma, meiser, challah. You're not allowed to eat the dough. So the reason why the ger has to separate the challah, even though it's a suffik, is because that's clearly suffik iser l'chumra, because you're not allowed to eat the dough. If he wants to enjoy the challah, he's going to have to separate the challah, the trumas and maisers and challah for the kohen. So that's why he has to separate it. But when it comes to the matnas kuhuna, the case was whether he was the shechita occurred before the geiris or not. Even worst case scenario, even if you don't give the matanis of the behema to the kohen, the behema is still, the rest of the behema is permitted to eat. It's not tevel. The obligation to give the gifts, these choices, these parts of the animal to the kohen, do not prohibit you from eating the rest of the meat before you do so, and therefore it's treated as a regular mamin. Safek mamin is lakula motzi mechaber olav arai. So says the Ran, you see clearly from the Gemara that when it's a safek iser, the Gemara says so. Chala is a safek iser, you have to separate the chala. He can't eat the dough until he separates the chala. Matnas kahuna is a mamin. He's allowed to hold on to the matnas kahuna because it's a suffix mamin. It's a moitz mechirel of araya. When it came to the leket, it happens to be that you have to give it to the poor people, but that's only because the field had the status of a cheskas chiyuv. It was subject to the halachas of leket, but not because suffix iser luchama. When it's a suffix iser, the Gemara says so, like chala. The Gemara did not say that regarding the leket. So that's the Ran's Kasha on the Ramban and the Rashba. One last Raya. The Gemara says in Maseches Yuma that a nachtoim, a baker, he's dealing with a lot of different dough. His supplier was an Am Ha'aretz, Demai. The halacha is you have to separate the Maisris from Demai Misafik, because we don't know if the Am Ha'aretz was observing these halachas. So it says all the nachtoim has to do is be mafresh the Trumas Meiser, the Meiser, and the Truma, and the Chala, because these are things that the Am Ha'aretz might not have separated. And the Gemara goes on to explain. Truma Gedoyla, you don't have to separate because the Amoratzim separate the Truma, for sure. That for some reason, they consider Truma to be more severe than the Meisers, so they separate the Truma. That they can be trusted. The Meiser Rishon and the Meiser Ani, it's interesting, you only have to separate it that it shouldn't be Tevel, but you don't have to actually give it to the Levi or to the poor person. But what about Meiser Sheni? Meiser Sheni, you have to go and eat it in Yerushalayim. The Gemara asks that. That should be a Suffolk Isser. The Gemara asks that. So the Gemara in Yuma actually differentiates between Meiser Ani, where it's sufficient to separate it, to designate it, but he doesn't have to actually release it to the poor person. He can hold on to the Meiser Ani, because Meiser Ani is mamin. It's regular money. It's between me and the poor person. I can say to the poor person, prove to me that this produce was never tithed, and then I'll gladly give you the Meiser Ani. But until you prove to me that the produce was not tithed, I can assume that it was, and I'm going to hold on to the Meiser Ani for myself. So again, the Gemara clearly says that Meiser Ani, which belongs to the poor, when there's a doubt, it's treated as regular money, and therefore it's subject to a motzi mechaver of araya. The Meiser Sheni, which is Issur v'Heter, you have to eat that in Yerushalayim. That the Gemara questions. You should be obligated to eat it in Yerushalayim misafik, out of doubt. But the Meiser Ani, the Gemara has no problem saying that you can hold on to the Meiser Ani unless the Ani can prove that the produce was untithed and that he deserves the Meiser Ani. You can continue holding on to the Meiser Ani, and you can eat it for yourself, because Amoitzi Mechaveir Olav Arai. So we have the example of Leket, and we have the example of Meiser Ani, where we treat it as regular money. So says the Ran, I don't understand the Rashba and the Ramban. Why in the world are they treating these gifts to the poor, the Peya, and the coin of Tzedakah, as Isser? Isser deraisa lechumra, we should simply treat it as another example of money. Whenever the doubt of money arises, we keep it with the muhsik, hamoitzi mechaveirei olavarei. So now in Zion, in item Zion, so I just summarized here, that we see from all of this that whenever there's a doubt, whenever the Gemara says teku, so even though the Gemara doesn't know the definitive ruling, but we have, there are guidelines themselves how to conduct ourselves in a makam safik. When it comes to an isser, we say safik deraisa lechumra. Even if we don't know if it's mutter or usser, we have to abstain because safik deraisa lechumra. I have to separate the challah because maybe it's tevel. I have to separate the meiser sheni and eat it in Yushalayim. Maybe it's meiser sheni. Safik deraisa lechumra. But when it comes to money matters, we say When it comes to money matters, we can be lenient. And we say, I don't have to pay. If I have a suffix, if I owe you money or not, the halacha is the burden of proof is on you. I'm allowed to hold on to the money until you prove definitively that I owe you money. Now, the Achroinim discuss, this is like a Shas topic. The Achroinim discuss that even though money is governed by Isurim, so for example, I'm not allowed to steal, loy sigzol, loy tignoivu, we know that there are prohibitions regarding money, there's a lav vayna, I can't cheat, I can't lie, I can't steal. So there are prohibitions regarding money. Of course, it's not a hefkervelt. Of course, there are prohibitions regarding money. So whenever I have a doubt if I owe you money, why don't we say hamotzi mechaber olav haraya? Why don't we say safik deraisa l'chumra? I don't want to violate zela, so maybe I should give you the money. So the achroinim say that the isser of money, all the mitzvahs and averis associated with money are governed by who we think the money belongs to. It's the other way around. We don't give the money to the poor. We don't award someone with the money because we're afraid that we're going to be over zela. On the contrary, we first decide objectively who the money belongs to, and then it'll be zela to take it away from him. So since when it comes to money, objectively, the svara is to leave it where it is, possession is 9/10 of the law, it makes sense that the burden of proof is on the person who's trying to extract the money, not vice versa. So we leave the money with the muhsik, and we say that you're not over lo sigzol because the svara is that you can hold the money. The other person has to prove if he wants a claim, he has to prove his claim. So if he would grab the money from you, he would be over lo sigzol because the money decides itself. Wherever the money is, we assume that's where it belongs, and the burden of proof is on the other person. So when it comes to Isser, the halacha is safik deraisa l'chumra. We have to be careful to avoid violating the prohibitions. But when it comes to money, the driving force is not the prohibition. The driving force is who we think the money belongs to. And then mimela, the prohibitions are applied. The prohibitions are the consequence of the ownership of the money, not the other way around. In the footnote here, I just said something interesting that in footnote number one, the truth is you could really say differently. The truth is that the Isser of Lysigzol can't really determine who the money belongs to, because what are you going to say? You're going to say that I shouldn't hold on. Imagine if I have a suffix if I owe you money. So I should not hold on to the money lest I violate Lysigzol. And if I give you the money, then maybe you're going to violate Lysigzol. So anyway, you can't use the prohibition to be the driving force. The prohibition, the driving force has to be objectively where it makes more sense to leave the money. You can't, the prohibition can't be the deciding factor because we both run the risk of violating Lysigzol. If the halacha is with me, then you're violating Lysigzol. If the halacha is with you, then I would be violating Lysigzol. So the determining factor here is not the prohibition. The determining factor is objectively who do we think, what makes more sense, where should we leave the money? That's halacha. Now there's another, in the footnote here, there's another big question in the Achroinim. When we do say, hamotzi mechaveroi olav haraya. So again, imagine if we have a suffix here, if I owe you money or not. So the ruling is, I can hold on to the money. Or imagine if this ger who converted, it's not clear if the shechita was before the conversion or after the conversion, so the court awards him with the matanis, the burden of proof is on the kohen. So he's allowed to keep the matanis, and he's certainly not violating Lysigzol. If the kohen would grab the matanis, perhaps he would violate Lysigzol, because the isurim are a toitza, the isurim are a result of objectively where we leave the money. The achroinim ask the question, a fundamental question, does that mean that these matanis, that these gifts, these pieces of meat, really belong to the ger? Because hamotzi mechaveru olav haraya paskins that it's his money? Or does it simply mean that we leave the matanis, we leave the doubtful money where it is, and you can continue using the money, but klapei shmaya. But as far as Hashem is concerned, if it really belongs to the other person, it really belongs to the other person. It doesn't become yours. You're not in any violation because since we honestly both don't know who it belongs to, I'm allowed to continue holding on to it and using it and enjoying it. But if it really belongs to you, then it wouldn't be considered mine. So the Pesukim discuss this. This is a fundamental question that has a lot of ramifications. If I would marry a woman with that doubtful money, would she definitively be my wife? Or if I bring fruit of a land and it's not clear if I own the land, even though the land is awarded to me out of doubt, would I be able to declare the bikurim alu adama shenasatali if the land might not really be mine? So this is a big question in the Achrayim. There are conflicting gemaras about this, whether or not money that we leave with the mochzik under the terms of a moitze mechavera olav araya, do we treat it like it's really, really, really his money, or is he just allowed to continue using the money because we can't prove otherwise? That's a fundamental question. But in any case, when it comes to Isser, we say Safek deraisa l'chor. When it says to Mammon, when it comes to Mammon, then we apply the rule, HaMoitzi Michaver Olav Araya. What's the machlokes between the Ran and the Rashba and the Ramban? The machlokes between the Ran on one side and the Rashba and the Ramban on the other side is how we treat Matnas Aniyim. Do we treat the Matnas Aniyim as Safek Mammon, in which case the driving force is who we think, what makes more sense, where should we leave the money? We treat it like ordinary money. Or do we treat Matnas Aniyim as Isser, in which case we would apply Safek Deraisa L'Chumra because the Balabayas doesn't want to violate the mitzvahs of Matnas Aniyim, so he has to be cautious, Safek Deraisa L'Chumra. The Ramban and the Rashba consider it to be Isser, Safek Deraisa L'Chumra, and the Ran treats it as ordinary money. Don't worry about the prohibitions, because if we decide the money is yours, then the prohibitions follow the money, not vice versa. That's the machlokes. So the Ran has some tremendous proofs against the Rashba and the Ramban. Basically, you see that Maiser Ani, when in doubt, we leave it with the Balabayas. He doesn't have to relinquish it to the Ani, because we can consider it his money. It's money. It's regular money. And the same thing applies to the Leket. The shearings, the droppings, he would be allowed to keep it had it not been for the cheskas chiyuv of the sadeh. He would be allowed to keep the leket. So what's going on? How does the Rashba and the Ramban, how do they defend themselves against the proofs of the Ran? The Machna Ephraim says something very interesting in Hilchos Stakos Siman Beis. Says the Machna Ephraim, a chakira. The Machna Ephraim has a question. When a person says the Gemara Nedar, Zuz, hare zuz ze. Let's talk. That was the example in the Durant. He wants this zuz to be for tzedakah. And then on the second one, he said, Vahande nami, this one as well. Or he said, this one. And we're not sure what he means. He's using the mechanism of a yad to declare the coin. The Machna Ephraim has a suffix. Why do you have to give the coin to an ani when you say, hare zuz zu tzedakah? Is it the pshat that Amira Legvoya is Kemesira Lehedyet, that the mere declaration that this coin should go to the Aniyim is in and of itself a Kinyan, and it now becomes the property of the Ani? It's like a Hektish. If you say Hareza Hektish, it becomes the property of Hektish. Amira Legvoya, a statement to the Gvoya, a statement to the Beis HaMikdash, is as if you handed it over in civilian law. So do we say that Zuzu Litzdaka, that declaration, the coin becomes the property of the Ani, or do we say that it's not Chal a Hatfasa on the Zuz, that there's no way to be Machne, there's no way to transfer ownership of the coin without a traditional Kinyan? All that's happening is you're making a Neder to give the coin to Tzedaka. So the question is like this: when I say Zuzu Litzdaka, did it just now become the property of an Ani? So I have to give it to the Ani because it's his property. Or is Zuzu Litzdaka a neder to give it to Tzedaka? Now, obviously, if you're sitting in shul and you pledge to the shul, so nothing of yours became the property of the shul because you didn't designate anything. We're discussing when there's a specific coin and you say, I want to give this coin to Tzedaka. Did that coin, poof, immediately become the property of the tzedakah, the aniyim, and the gabai would have full rights to claim it and give that coin to the tzedakah. And then the question would be, can I borrow the money back? Can I exchange it for other money? All sorts of questions, because that coin is the property of the aniyim. Or do we say that the coin didn't become the property of the aniyim? No kinyan was performed. It's a neder to give that coin to tzedakah. That's the Mach Nefraim stuff. Says the Mach, and the Rishonim, there's different Mashmois in the Rishonim here and there. So the Mach Nefraim says that it would seem that that's the argument between the Ramban and the Rashba on one side versus the Ram. The Ramban and the Rashba hold that when you say Zuzu Litztaka, it's not the property of the Ani, it's a Neder. It's a Neder. You now are under oath to give that coin to the Ani. So says the Mach Nefraim, if that's the case, we completely understand the Ramban and the Rashba. When a person says, I want to give this coin to Tzedakah, that's a neder. When the person looks at the next coin and says, V'hadein, and what about this coin? So now the Gemara had a question. If there's a yad for Tzedakah, did that fragmented statement bind you to give that coin to Tzedakah or not? So says the Mach Nefraim, if it's a neder, so what are we saying? We're saying now that you have a suffix if you just made a neder. That's clearly Isser. Suffix deraisa l'chumra. That's why the Rashba and the Ramban say you have to give the coin to the Ani. Mi suffix, because it's not a money issue. The coin doesn't belong to the Ani anyway. The coin still belongs to you regardless, because no kinyan, no formal kinyan was performed. It's a suffix neder. What obligates you to give the coin to the Ani? The neder. So when I say I want this coin to go to the Ani, and then you have an ambiguous statement on the second coin, a fragmented statement on the second coin, if there's a suffix that you meant to make a neder, then there's a suffix neder. So of course the isser is going to be the driving factor, because the money belongs to you regardless. The question is, do I have to fulfill my neder or not? That's why the Ramban treats it as a suffix derived from the chumah, the suffix isser. But the Ran holds, like the other side of the Machna Ephraim, that when you say zuzu l'tzdaka, it's a hatfasa. You basically have a magical power through the parsha of the Dorim to be machna into the Ani. So it became the property of the Ani. I don't have any neder here to give it to the Ani. The reason I have to give it to the Ani is because it belongs to the Ani. Because when you say zuzu l'tzdaka, it just became the property of the Ani, and you're simply giving the Ani what's already his. So the Ran, from that perspective, is also very reasonable. It also makes a lot of sense. Says the Ran, why would this be different than any suffix mamon? I went ahead and said, I want this coin to belong to the Ani. Poof, that coin belongs to the Ani. And then you had a fragmented, ambiguous statement on the second coin. And this coin, what do you mean to say? Do you mean to say you want that coin to belong to the Ani? Or do you mean to say you want to spend that coin on yourself? So it's a suffix if that coin became the mamon aniyim. So the Ran says we should treat it like ordinary money, and the burden of proof is on the Ani. If the Ani can prove that yesh yad l'tzedakah, then it's his. If the Ani can't prove that, then it's a suffix mamon, and I can hold on to the money myself. What about the Isser? So says the Ran, there is no neder here. It's a question simply of who the money belongs to, and we follow the principles of a mitzvah mechir v'raya, even though the litigant, even though the other party is an Ani, but it's nothing to do with a neder. It's simply a money matter. Who does this money belong to? But the Ramban looks at it that it's a question of a neder. It's a suffix isser, because the money belongs to you regardless. The suffix is whether or not you're under oath. If that's the case, suffix deraisa l'chum. That's the basic idea. But there's one loose end. The loose end is that the Rashba, and I emphasized this before, the Rashba does not just say it regarding staka, he says it even regarding peya. Now, when you declare on the second row, the first row is peya, and what about the second row? So now we don't know if that's a fragmented statement. We don't know what you meant. Do you mean to declare the second row is peya as well, or do you mean to simply say that you want to keep that second row for yourself? Of course, it seems that you wanted to make a peya, but it's only a yad. So was your declaration valid or not? Was it effective or not? So when you say hareza peya, that's for sure a hatfasa. That's for sure a declaration that gives the row the status of peya. So in this case, the Ran should be right, because clearly it's a suffix on the money. Does the row of produce belong to me, or does it belong to the institution of peya? If it's peya, then it's the mamon aniyim. If it belongs to me, then it's mine. why shouldn't the rules of a Moitzi Mechaveira of a Raya of Cheskas Mamon govern this question? What about the Aveira of taking the Aniyim's payah? But we have to look at it objectively. Who does the payable, who does this produce belong to? If it belongs to me, there is no prohibition of taking the Ani's pay. If it belongs to the Ani, so then of course it is. So the Stipler in the Dorim Simon Tess brings a very interesting Rambam. And this is going to explain the Rashba's opinion regarding the payah as well. The Rambam says, we're all familiar with the principle, we once discussed this actually, that ein adam makna darish le bal olam, that there's no way to convey ownership on something that's not yet extant. So for example, I have a tree in my backyard, an apple tree. I say to you, if you give me $100, I'm hereby transferring to you all the future apples. The apples didn't even grow yet, but I want to sell you the apples now. When the apples grow, they'll be yours. Why? Because you gave me money now, so the apples will automatically be yours when they grow. So we all know the halacha, ein adam makna darish le bal olam, that before something is in existence, you can't convey ownership. So I can back out. Even after the apples grow, I have the choice to return to you your money and get my apples because the kinyan was ineffective. Says the Rambam, what if a person is makdish something to the Beis HaMikdash? Or what if the person declares something to the Aniyim? Or the person makes a neder? So says the Rambam that the Dine, Hektish, and Aniyim, and Nedarim are not like Hedyoy when it comes to the Kniya. If a person says, so the Rambam says, that if my animal conceives and gives birth to a baby cow, so I want to declare that animal to be hektish to the Bedek Abayis, or I want to make a neder against myself not to enjoy that baby animal, or I want to give that baby animal to tzedakah. So says the Rambam, even though you can't convey ownership before something's in existence, so when the baby animal is born, it does not yet belong to the Beis HaMikdash because your declaration, your conveyance, was before the animal was born. Ein adam makna darish le bal olam. But says the Rambam, you have an obligation to fulfill a neder. So the Stipler is medayik from the Rambam, a fascinating thing. Even though your statement was not a kabbalas neder, you didn't say haray olai, I hereby promise to give my baby animal to Beis HaMikdash. I didn't say that. I said I'm declaring my future animal to be hektish. That's all I said. So it's up to you. Tell me if it worked or not. If it worked, I'll gladly give it to the Beis HaMikdash. If it didn't work, then it didn't work. It was ineffective. It was a nonsensical declaration. I never took upon myself to give it. But says the Rambam, whenever you say that you want something to go to the Beis HaMikdash, besides the conveyance of ownership, inherent in your statement is a neder. It's included in your statement is a neder, that you promise to give it to the Beis HaMikdash as well. So you really, every time you say you want to give something to the Beis HaMikdash, anytime you declare you want this animal to be hektish, or you want this coin to go to the Aniyim, or you want this to be usher, besides the transfer of ownership, you're also taking upon yourself a neder to fulfill that, to make it happen. So the Rambam says, even though when you try to be makdish something, or to give it to the poor people, it was ineffective because it wasn't yours, it wasn't yet in the world. Coupled with your statement is also an implicit vow to follow through. That's what the Rambam says. So when it comes to a loy bala olam, in the world of hedyot, in the private sector, it's going to be nothing. But when it comes to hektish, together with the hektish is also a neder. So even if the hektish cannot be chal, it's ineffective because it was loy bala olam, but the neder that accompanies it, you will have to fulfill. So says the Stipler, based on this Rambam, when it comes to payah, so perhaps we can say that when you declare the second row payah with an ambiguous statement, so it's a suffix if the payah was chal, nevertheless, together with your statement is an implied neder. So what was the question? The question is, why does the Rashba consider payah to be a matter of iser v'heter, suffik deraisa l'chumra? Why doesn't the Rashba consider the payah to be a monetary issue? Objectively, does the row of produce belong to me or to the ani? So says the Stipler, based on the Rambam, that of course, if we would look at this simply at the pure monetary aspect, it would be a suffik mamon. But together with the declaration of payah, accompanied that declaration is an implicit neder that you also want to fulfill the rules of Peya, and therefore, if there is a Yad for Peya, remember, it's not even clear if your declaration was affected, but if there is a Yad for Peya, then it comes along with the nether. And if there is no Yad for Peya, then it doesn't. So we're going to treat it here as a Suffolk Isser, because there's two things going on at once. There's a Suffolk Mammon together with a Suffolk Isser. Therefore, the Suffolk Isser will require you to fulfill your Suffolk vow, because it's a Suffolk Deraisa L'Chumra, and you're going to have to leave it there for the poor people. Now, in item Yud Dalid, I put in the brackets that it could very well be that the Ramban disagrees with this. That's why the Ramban only talks about Staka, because Staka is a vow. When you say you want to give this coin to Staka, if it doesn't convey ownership, then the alternative is that it's a vow. But when it comes to Peya, when you declare something Peya, the Ramban might very well hold that all you're doing is declaring it as Peya. You're not also accepting upon yourself a vow. So if there's a Suffolk, if the Peya was Chal, then I wouldn't have to give the Peya. So we have really three opinions. The Ran holds that we treat it like a Suffolk Mammon. You get to keep the money, because all the nether does is convey ownership. If it was ineffective because there's no Yad, I get to keep the money. I get to keep the pay. The Ramban, the Rashba on the other side, says that whenever you're dealing with an ani, it's as if you're playing with fire. That included in your statement is going to be a nether. So when it comes to tztaka, there's a nether here. There's an element of nether. When it comes to peya, even peya, that you declared it as peya, there's an element of nether. So Suffolk deraisa l'chumra. And the Ramban is sort of a compromise position between the Ran and the Rashba. When it comes to tztaka, it's a nether. When it comes to peya, peya was a declaration of peya. It does not, there's no nether component. And therefore, when it comes to peya, he sides with the Ran that you can keep the peya. When it comes to tztaka, it's a purely nether, it's a nether shaila, and therefore you'd have to give it to the ani. Coming back to the question from the Gemara in Yuma, what about Meiser Ani? When you declare Meiser Ani, why is it that when it's Demai, when it's a Suffolk, why can you keep the Meiser Ani? According to the Rambam and the Rashba, what about the nether component? So the answer is simple. Since Meiser Ani, you never intended on giving it to the Ani, because you knew that it was Demai. You only were separating the Meiser Ani to remove the Tevel. You had no intention of giving that to the Ani, because you know the halacha that you're not required to give Meiser Ani to the Ani. So therefore, there's no accompanying nether. When is there an accompanying nether according to the Rambam and the Rashba? When your intent was to give it, was to deliver it. So then it also affects the nether. So we have to treat it like a Suffolk Isser. But everyone knows when it comes to Demai that you have no intention of giving it to the Ani. You're only separating the Meiser Ani to absolve yourself of the Tevel, but you had no intention, mitchila, to give it to the Ani. Therefore, there's no accompanying nether in that case. The Aruch HaShulchan in Yoredeya Simen Reish Nun Ches is discussing whether or not tztaka is chal b'machshava. I would like to discuss that topic. Maybe that'll be a topic in one of the upcoming shiurim. Whether or not tztaka is chal b'machshava. So look what the Aruch HaShulchan says. It's a suffik in the Rishonim, machoikis Rishonim. Even according to the first opinion, it's only called Gomar Baliba Machshava if you really sincerely intend with a hechlet to give the money. Then it's considered a sincere conviction that you want to give it to the Ani. Then it's Chal B'Machshava. We're going to talk more about this in future Shiurim. So says the Aruch HaShulchan exactly what we're saying here. What if a person has a Machshava to give tzedakah? It's a Machlekes Rishonim. So the Aruch HaShulchan paskins that the Beis Din can't force you, because it's a Suffolk Dedina, we can't take away the money. And Mekveger seems to say the same thing. But there's an element of nether here. So the noider has to be choshish for the nether. So you see from the Aruch HaShulchan a similar thing, that sometimes we treat it like a Suffolk Mammon, and sometimes we treat it because of the nether component as a Suffolk Isser. So that would be the Asayda Machlekes here between the Ran and the Rashba and the Ramban. When do we treat something as a Suffolk Isser? When do we treat something as a Suffolk Mammon? Basically, the bottom line is that that objectively it's a Suffolk Mammon, but the Ramban and the Rashba hold that there's a nether component in these cases. And therefore, you have to be careful because of the nether, which would be a Suffolk Isser. Yasha Koyach, everybody.
Recording stopped.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Hashem, we'll continue some of these topics in